Hello everyone, welcome to this webinar. I'm Francis Seeley from GlobalNet 21 and Enfield Voices, and this is one of the many webinars we do. What we're going to look at today is something called governance. Now we talk about local government, but governance is much more than just government, and we're going to look at that and look at one particular local authority in Enfield where we think they have particular problems in having a robust and proper form of governance. And we've got Sue Saunders here to talk to us about this. And she has had a long background in local government governance. So welcome, Sue, and I'm glad you're here with us today. Can I ask you first of all to briefly tell us something about your background and your experience in local government governance?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I am actually a qualified accountant. I'm a CIPRA accountant, so I specialise in public finance. So I worked in local authorities for many years. I was also a public sector consultant for the big four, like Pricewaterhouse. But I've worked for organisations like the Audit Commission, on best practice in governance, value for money studies, that sort of thing. But I also have other experience as well. I chaired an audit committee for a London borough for many years. I'm now an independent member of a governance and assurance committee. And I also chaired an audit committee for a health trust as well.
Okay, we're going to talk about governance, and you know, some people may not be sure what governance means. So maybe you could explain, first of all, what's the difference between government and governance?
Okay, well, let's just focus initially on governance then. When we elect our politicians, and we're going to focus on local government today, when we elect our local politicians, effectively we have an implicit social contract with them. We elect our local councillors to do right by us, to uphold the highest standards of conduct, to actually provide services in the most efficient and effective manner as possible, and to explain their actions. You know, they are councillors, as indeed other politicians, have to be accountable, and they are accountable to us. And the key thing is they are accountable to all of their residents, not sectional interests. So governance basically is the scaffolding around government, really. I guess you can put it that way. It's all the checks and balances that you have around decision making to ensure that all decisions are based on objective evidence, that they're transparent, and appropriate consultation has taken place. We as residents need to be confident that, you know, decisions are rational and fair and proportionate and make the best use of the limited resources that local authorities have. And so I can go on to talk about those different checks and balances that we have if you want, Francis.
Okay, but governance is about, isn't it, not just how the government runs itself, but it's also about how it relates to its stakeholders, its citizens, and its communities.
That's absolutely right. It is about social accountability. And that's become of growing importance over recent decades. If you go back to, you know, the sort of the early days of governments, it was all about procedures and enforcement and legal compliance. But increasingly over the years, you know, local authorities have been encouraged to reach out to citizens and to actively engage citizens and specific stakeholder groups in the decisions that are made and in ensuring that those decisions are actually the best ones for our local community.
Okay, but governance involves, doesn't it, not just councillors, but officers as well. It's the whole caboose, really.
It is certainly. I was focusing on the politicians there, but obviously governance is also about the relationships between officers and councillors. And quite often when you see poor governance, what it can indicate is that officers and councillors are not properly communicating with each other, or indeed that officers can be afraid of communicating with councillors.
So it's about how officers communicate with each other and with councillors and with the public. But it's a two-way flow, isn't it? Governance also means an engaged citizenship, doesn't it? It means out there, beyond the council, there has to be a willingness to engage. And then the council has to have a strategy to engage with those citizens inclusively. Is that how you would look at it?
That's absolutely right, Francis. And I think one of the issues that we have, and more so now perhaps than we had 10 to 15 years or so, is that people are, they just automatically distrust politicians, and quite often that stops them from engaging with local debates and issues unless there's an imperative to do so. You know, people take local services for granted. But of course, it's the obligation of the local authority to reach out to people and to ensure that they are engaged. But it is definitely a two-way process.
Well, let's talk about the engagement in a minute. But another thing is governance by a local authority does involve a degree of modesty, doesn't it? It involves the feeling you don't do it all on your own. You've got to share good practice. You've got to see where it's happening elsewhere. Some local authorities like to think that anything good that's been discovered, it was them that discovered it. And we've got to get rid of that attitude, haven't we?
Absolutely. Well, I think if you are a local councillor, you should by definition be humble. I mean, it's an incredibly complex job, and it's one you've actually got to learn on the job. And it is very difficult, and it becomes increasingly complex in these days of financial austerity, but also because services are delivered via quite complex means these days. They're not just within the control of local authorities. So, you know, when politicians are elected, it's very important that they are trained properly and that they are humble enough to listen. I mean, it is a role of great privilege to represent your local community. It really is. And you are given considerable powers and discretion. And, you know, so therefore, councillors should uphold the highest standards of conduct and should engage their communities as much as possible, because inevitably you are never going to understand everything, you know, the impact on everyone. And to come to your point, I think it is more difficult these days to share good practice amongst local authorities. I think it requires more effort. And one of the things that I do miss is the Audit Commission, because the Audit Commission was focused very much on local government. And I certainly remember from my local authority days, if I had an issue about running housing management or care in the community, actually I wrote their care in the community report, but I would actually go to those reports and look at what they saw as good practice, because I knew that they would have reviewed and consulted local authorities across the piece. And I think one of the issues today is that perhaps there's not enough external scrutiny and support, and local authorities are a bit more isolated, and that creates all sorts of dangers, I think.
Well, it needs that internally and across local authorities. But to have good governance, you also need, don't you, an active local press and social networks nowadays, anyhow, in the world of social media. And that's problematic, isn't it? Because we've seen the press decline, and we've seen social media very often, you know, be quite abusive and not engage in the proper sort of discussion that should take place. So how much a problem is that for accountability and for good governance?
Well, I think the difficulty, let's just talk about social media for a second. What's interesting is that I've searched, but I can't see Enfield has a social media policy. which I think is quite surprising and quite high risk. But the difficulty is of course, is that the debate on social media is very reductionist, and people divide into tribes, and sometimes it can be really quite aggressive and quite rude. But there are all sorts of things that local authorities could do to obviate that. And one, I think, is to provide, you know, it's up to local authorities to inform their residents. So if local authorities are making a decision, a material decision, they need to set out their case and their reasoning for that decision. And if they don't, if there's not a proper justification, if there's not a proper, let's use the terminology, business case for any decision, then social media will pile in and fill the vacuum in a very uninformed way. And that is part of the role of a local authority, is to empower its citizens, to enable them to engage properly in an informed manner. And, you know, if I think a number of authorities fall down on that, but I would say that Enfield is, you know, at the very poor end of the spectrum in that way. And coming to your issue about local press, I think you do an absolutely invaluable job, Francis, in allowing these sorts of discussions to take place. Because where do you see debates about governance? And yet governance is vital to the good running of, well, of companies, but our political institutions. And we need more debates about the boring stuff, the cogs and wheels, that actually keep the show on the road and actually ensure, you know, propriety, basically. So yes, the fact that there are now fewer local papers means, I think, that there's less external challenge. And I keep coming back to that point, that you always need effective external challenge. Now, some of that can come from government, some of that can come from audit. Some of that can come from, you know, organizations like the Center for Public Scrutiny. But, you know, the press has always in the past played an important role in shining a light on local authorities and their strengths and weaknesses. And I think, you know, the press tends to, the press, in order to attract a readership, focuses on those issues that it thinks it can get, you know, the most readership. And that's not really things like governance, is it?
Yeah. And another point about governance, which I think is quite important, is that when the Improvement and Development Agency existed and they superseded the Local Government Management Board, they said a councillor has three roles. One is to be leader in their community, the other is to scrutinise decisions, and the other is to make decisions, executive, the cabinet. But it was quite clear that these three should be separated. And one of the problems of governance is that some local authorities, and Enfield is a prime case in this, find it difficult to separate those three functions. How important is it that they should be independent?
Oh gosh, well, I mean, scrutiny is such a contentious issue, I think, in local authorities, and a lot of local authorities simply don't get this right, because I think councillors fail to understand the role of scrutiny. But if, I mean, let's just try and unpick this a bit, because I mean, I'm sure you know this, but actually there was a report by the Centre for Public Scrutiny on Enfield Council. Did you see that report, Francis?
No, I didn't.
Well, folks, if you want to have a look, go to the Cabinet Papers, 1st of July 2020, and you will see a report there by the Centre for Public Scrutiny. So if you want an idea of how Enfield is functioning, you know, way beyond this webinar, I would strongly urge you to look at this report, actually, because it certainly suggested there's plenty of room for improvement. But one of the difficulties with scrutiny is it's the poor cousin of cabinets and executive decisions. So quite often, those, and I'm talking generally here, those people that are given the chair of scrutiny panels, that tends to be a compensation prize. It tends to be a stepping stone on your way to cabinet. Or, you know, the leader can appoint people that it knows will just toe the party line, because so many decisions are not made in cabinet, they're made in, you know, group meetings. And so the whole scrutiny process can be manipulated. But in order for scrutiny to work, and this is a criticism that was levelled at Enfield, those members have to be very, very clear about their role and purpose. And, you know, from the one meeting that I've witnessed at Enfield, I think personally it's just a huge muddle.
I was going to say, in a way, they don't follow the advice of the Office for Public Scrutiny, which has changed its name, I gather. It's not called that now. But I mean, they argue that, you know, scrutiny committees should have a strategy. They should work it out beforehand. They should have pre-meetings. They should go out and visit areas that they're investigating. They should have pre-decision scrutiny at the point of decision scrutiny and post-decision scrutiny as well. Enfield seems to have none of that. I mean, it's just a mess when you see it. And I'm sure this is true in a lot of other local authorities as well. They don't follow the advice of the Office of Public Scrutiny. They say they are, but when you look at it, they're doing completely the opposite. I mean, do you get that feeling as well?
Well, I think what's interesting is to look at that report on the 1st of July and to see whether they do actually follow the recommendations set out there by the experts, actually. Because, I mean, what they've done is they've set up, I think, 7 scrutiny panels to focus on their key issues. But the bits that they don't seem to have done yet, which are not evident to the public, is really clarify their roles or stick to a work programme. I mean, the words that the Centre for Public Scrutiny used were scattergun and random, basically, about Enfield, and they call in far too many reports. And there's not a work programme that they actually adhere to. And you know, coming back to a point that you alluded to, most critically, they don't make use of witnesses, whether expert witnesses or members of the community. I mean, I think what is absolutely fascinating and deeply frightening, actually, about Enfield is actually how they do not have a consultation and engagement strategy, and how scrutiny doesn't actually reach out to its local community and fully understand the impact of decisions, on people's lives. Now, it certainly does suggest that there is a bit of a breakdown in relationship between officers and councillors. I mean, while I think councillors need far more training, I mean, one of the interesting issues, I think, about Enfield, and this is a point that was made in the scrutiny report, is last election, there were 29 new councillors out of a total of 63. That is 46%. Now, if you are new to local government, you actually have to go through quite a long induction process, really, to understand how things work. And I suppose I do question whether, you know, our councillors are sufficiently have achieved a sufficient level of competence to undertake scrutiny functions properly. And I think they need a lot more help. And of course, what I don't understand is, because I don't work within Enfield, is whether officers are being ignored or they feel that they can't speak up or what. I just don't know.
Well, the leader was fairly new as well. And, you know, she was sort of found in breach of the code of conduct on the council for trying to influence the chairman of, or the then chairman of, the scrutiny committee. Do you think that was because of experience? She just didn't know how it worked? Or was there something more devious going on?
I think the problem is, Francis, we don't know. But when these things are publicised, it inevitably creates distrust, doesn't it? And I think what's happened is, whether it's, you know, whether we have enough information to distrust, I don't know. But I think what's happened is that because the governance with Enfield seems quite weak and there's not enough engagement with its public, is And you know, there are all sorts of controversial issues where people feel they are not being listened to, is that people now distrust the council. And that is a really sorry state to be in. But obviously, when you have weak governance, if the checks and balances aren't in place, I mean, ideally, I would like to see chairs of scrutiny committee elected via a secret ballot. I think that would, you know, it is very hard to make them truly independent, and that is potentially one way of doing it. I mean, I have all sorts of thoughts about how we could improve scrutiny. But, you know, you have to understand, obviously, that politics is a very dirty, is a dirty game, and people try to, you know, influence others through all sorts of different means. And of course, the local, you know, the local Conservative and Labour Party, they're also trying to carry out national policy as well. And that's the difficulty, in that we know politics is murky and not always appropriate, which is why we have these governance frameworks. But those governance frameworks have to be imposed, they have to be enforced, they've got to be seen to be working. And I would say at the moment, they cannot be seen to be working within Enfield.
I mean, you mentioned their political parties and they're following a political line nationally. And this sometimes means that the whip can be very rigid, and it stops councillors having the freedom they should have with their community to give their own views. And in a local area, that's what you need. You don't need rigid whipping, do you? And that mitigates against good governance when that happens.
I think that's right. And as I say, I think that's in a sense the point I was trying to make. We're seeing this real tension, I think, between, you know, good, well-run local authorities and politics. And, you know, and I do wonder, I mean, you know, I mean, we need politicians to be good role models. And, you know, frankly, you know, if we look at politics in this country, I'm going to be political for a moment, but if you were to look at the whole Brexit debate and all the assertions that were made, if you to look at Trump and, you know, and all his assertions, politics, there's an awful lot in politics now that seems to be that if you say something enough times, it becomes true. So you don't have to evidence it, you just say it enough times. And I do wonder the extent to which politicians, wherever they're operating, have absorbed this playbook and feel that they can get away with it. But you are seeing, I think, some very inappropriate behaviours amongst politicians. And I'm talking more broadly here than Enfield. And so that is why good governance is so, so important. And, you know, one of the big issues is that less is spent. You have to remember that local authorities have been hammered financially, and much less is spent on governance than it was 10 years ago.
You also mentioned earlier that, you know, consultation is an important part of good governance. And you get the feeling in Enfield, but other local authorities as well, I don't think Enfield is alone on this, that their consultation is one-sided. They either want it as a public relations exercise, or they want to consult only the people they want to consult, or it's a bilateral consultation, you know, by email, and you don't know everyone else who's consulted, and you don't get a whole picture. And there are platforms that you can use to have that openness and transparency where you can see what everyone's doing. Now, Enfield, like a number of local authorities, isn't doing that. In other words, their consultation is not based upon what you would, I think, describe as principles of good governance. Or would you disagree with that?
Well, I think, you know, and I urge people to go and look at the Nolan principles, and I think this local authority is guilty of flouting Nolan principles. But I'm just going to give you a tiny example here, because yes, I do agree with you. But I decided to, you know, because I've not been actively involved in the local borough until recently, and I looked for minutes of ward meetings. There are no, for some wards, there are absolutely no minutes. For others, the minutes are pretty useless, frankly. They say absolutely nothing. You can't even get records of meetings, basically. So, I mean, there is an absence of there's no documentation of any meetings, you know, that have been had with local people. I'm briefly just going to mention low traffic neighbourhoods, and I know that the deputy leader has had meetings with a number of interest groups. Now, how those interest groups were selected, you know, who knows? But there's no minutes of those meetings anywhere. Now, one has to question whether that is good consultation, whether that is transparent, accountable practice. And, you know, I think it is very hard to argue that it is. But the interesting, one of the very interesting things I think about Enfield, which is an omission compared to a number of local authorities, is that it has no proper consultation and engagement strategy. So if you look, for instance, at our neighbouring borough, Barnet, it's actually got something that on paper looks really good. And I would urge people to go and look at the Barnet thing and to lobby for something like that in Enfield. It is very all-encompassing. But if you, you know, if you have a look, you will see that some authorities do on paper have good strategies. Now, of course, there's a huge gap between what's on paper and what may happen in practice, you know, because, you know, to make these things actually work, we have to have councillors who behave, you know, in an appropriate way with integrity and transparency. But at least it's a starting point, because people can then go back to the council and say, well, what about this? And what about that? What are you doing? It is a means of actually starting to hold the council accountable. And what we've got here within Enfield, I mean, the kindest way of describing it is a very random way of engaging with its public, and a very undocumented way. And, you know, that can't be right, can it, Francis? It really can't be.
But one of the problems, I guess, in Enfield is that the party has been, the Labour Party that controls it, has been at war with each other. It's been at loggerheads. Four have left to form another group on the council. One councillor has resigned because that councillor thought that they couldn't do their job properly given the leadership. Now, when you have that sort of bitterness there, it really doesn't help with governance, does it? That is a real problem, because what happens is the leadership then adopts a bunker mentality. And when you have a bunker mentality, there is no openness. And that's a real problem.
I think that could be seen as a fair analysis of what might be happening. But to me, what that suggests is we can't let politics, I mean, we cannot let politics trump good governance, if I can use that word trump in that context. We really can't. And so what that suggests to me is that we actually have to find other ways of enforcing good governance. And I personally would like to see far more scrutiny of local authorities. Now, all of this, of course, is a cost at a time when, you know, national government doesn't want to put money into local authorities. But the danger that we have is that effectively local government is breaking down at the moment, and decisions may be imposed on communities that they don't really want. Now, of course, ultimately we have the ballot box, but, you know, the ballot box is never quite close enough, is it? And so I would really like to see, you know, much more focus and lobbying of central government to improve, to say have statutory scrutiny officers, to have Ofsted type inspections of local authorities. You know, we could even have a governance index, and, you know, those things can be gained. But people need to be able to judge how good the governance is in their local authorities, because it's very hard for your, you know, your average punter to be able to do that. So I think we've got to the point where more external intervention is required to mitigate the sort of issue that you're raising.
So, I mean, external intervention might be important, and it might or might not happen. But when you've got real dysfunctions in governance, like you have in some authorities like Enfield, how important is it for civil society, community groups to step up to the mark and fill that gap, and to hold councils to accountability, and to do it, you know, very openly and very robustly?
Well, of course, it is very important for civil society to do that. And obviously, you know, there are all sorts of groups that can try to advocate on the, you know, like age concern or whatever on the part of, you know, specific communities. And yes, you know, protests, petitions, things like that are very valid forms of civil action. And of course, one of the difficulties that we've had over the last year or so is that's all been hampered by COVID. But, you know, civil action can only take you so far. You know, local authorities don't necessarily listen to petitions and things like that. They are an invaluable part of the process. Ultimately, you may have to resort to the law, and that is challenging. But ultimately, one has to remember that local authorities are creatures of statute. They have to comply with the law.
Well, sort of, you know, going to law is another whole big question we could sort of follow in at another time, because that's interesting and it is happening increasingly, unfortunately, in modern times. Well, we sort of come to the end of the 30 minutes, but maybe the last thing I could ask you is if anyone wants to learn more about governance, what it means, or make contact with you, how would they go about it?
Well, I would actually go to the Centre for Public Scrutiny and look at what they've got on their website. I mean, I would look at NAO, the National Audit Office reports. I would just Google governance and local authorities and see what actually comes up. And you know, have a look at how other authorities actually do frame their consultation and engagement strategies, because there's an awful lot to be learned. And I think there is a huge amount of lobbying of Enfield Council that actually can be done. You know, look at the Barnett strategy, write to the monitoring officer, because we've not talked about the role of the monitoring officer in terms of upholding standards within local authorities, but it's Jeremy Chambers, for those of you who don't know. Write to him, ask for a proper consultation and engagement strategy.
Okay, that may be a big ask, but we'll see whether that happens. Anyhow, thank you for doing it, Sue. I mean, I hope councillors listen to this. I hope officers listen to this. And I'm sure community groups will, because they have a very important part to play. So thank you for explaining to us what governance is and what the building blocks are. And, you know, to what extent local authorities are following that, because I think that's really, really important. So I think this has been an incredibly useful interview that we can take further as time goes by. So thank you for taking part in this, and we'll end this interview now.